fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
He's got the first down and more, and Adrian Peterson's heading for the end zone. Touchdown, Cardinals! What a debut by Alday!
Rise up and make a play.
He's hit by Chandler Jones and sacked.
You've got to be kidding me.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
All right, here in week 15, gentlemen, we should probably let you know, out of common courtesy, if nothing else, that, well, Big Brother has been monitoring your tablets and your laptops, and they have been tracking exactly how much time you've been putting into the research and the numbers and the stats and the blogs and the chats and everything and all the above. And, Darren, you're doing better than you were last year. Let's put it that way.
I didn't know you work for Facebook there.
I see. No, I was just thought, I just thought I'd get a reaction. You know, what it's like to be a player and have your film study tracked by the decision makers. Paul Calvisi, Kyle Odegaard, Darren Urban. It is Cardinals Underground. And it is, there is sort of an underground element to Big Brother watching over the players and how much film they watch.
That's a lot of pressure, man. I mean, you're here and you want to put in a solid day's work, and you know the coaches are watching you every step you make when you're here, but then when you get home, they're still monitoring how much you're on that Surface tablet and looking up plays. So it's, I mean, you don't feel like you ever have any time off, I don't think, during the season.
Wouldn't you think, though, that ultimately the only time that comes back to bite you is if you make mental errors on the field? I mean, if you're not making any mental errors, they're not going to care.
Well, Harold Goodwin said it last week in the press conference. How many Hall of Famers has he been around who didn't even practice very well? Sometimes they'd wait till Friday.
No,
sometimes,
he didn't say well. He said at all.
Yeah, sometimes they wouldn't practice. And then, boom, as long as you can play, you will play.
It's an amazing thing of sports.
There's the star rule, but I'm thinking more of the guys that are on the cusp of being on the team or trying to start compared to backup, and you know that this is just another element that they can look at. And I mean, it's definitely motivation because they know that they're always watching you.
Hey, you know what, NFL players, welcome to the world of the media in 2017. We're always at work on social media and Twitter. That's never ending. That's 24/7.
That's
right,
true.
Darren, come on. Now
I'm not going to deny that.
Then again, the players might say, man, we just allowed only 7 points and only 204 total yards, season best, and only 10 yards rushing in the second half by Tennessee. Man, coach, well, they did get a victory Monday after BA said, you know what? Here you go, guys. 12-7, a slugfest win against the Tennessee Titans, and we'll take you right into the locker room, all access.
The character in this room, can't say enough about every man that stood up today. Couldn't be prouder as a coach. But the character stood out today. Congratulations, I'll see you on Wednesday.
Yay!
Hey, man, it's a great team win, man. Cards on three. 1, 2, 3, cards.
Did they hear anything besides see you on Wednesday?
You had me at see you. How about Carlos Dansby there? Started it with the pregame speech. He ends it there with a final breakdown in the locker room. What stands out to you guys? Do you start with the defense and some of those numbers I just cited?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, for the last several weeks, the defense has been the unit that's been carrying this team. I know we focused a lot on Blaine Gabbert and what he's done and his future, and there have been so many injuries on the offensive side that we've looked at the offense so much. But this defense, I think, has really taken a huge step forward. I think when you put Tremont Williams at the second cornerback spot, I think that solidified a lot of stuff on the back end. I think Olsen Pierre's emergence on the defensive line has been important. So I think the defense is really playing to the point where we thought, where now in points allowed, they're still like 25th. But you look at the more advanced metrics, and they're consistently 7th, 8th, 6th, 5th in the league in different things, which you may not think just looking at the totality of the season, but judging by more so than just points, I think this group is a lot better than they're getting credit for.
You know, Josh Bynes pointed to one key metric. We'll get to that a little bit later, but anytime you win the turnover battle, most of the time you're going to win the game. In fact, when the Cardinals have multiple picks under BA, they're 21-1. When they have no turnovers, they're 18-3-1. And here's the GM, Steve Keim, on the win against Tennessee.
It was a hard-fought win, and extremely proud of our guys. When you look at the amount of players on injured reserve and the frontline starters that are missing, it just continues to say a lot about the character in our locker room, just like Coach said.
The Cardinals outrushed the Titans 136-65, and this was the number 7th ranked rushing offense. They came in number 3 in run D, and the Cardinals beat them in both departments.
You know, I know Bruce Arians has referred to this a couple times, and some of it's anecdotal. I haven't gone back and actually crunched the numbers, but the Cardinals over the years really have played great run defense at home. There have been times on the road that's gotten away from them, but for the most part, they've played really good run defense at home, and I would not. It's a hard place to come in and run for whatever reason, whether it's the defense getting amped up or whatever it might be. And I'd say
it's two games against Todd Gurley, and I can't remember anyone else.
I think that's probably about right. As I kind of like mentally scan through it, that's a number one when it comes to defense. And what the Cardinals found, both in the win against the Titans and a couple weeks ago against the Jaguars, is if you can find a way to shut down the run first, things tend to trend your way. And that's really what it comes down to. And I think that's what happened in both these games. Games that were close enough they could have lost. And they played better defensively against the Titans than they did the Jaguars. But ultimately they win, I think, in large part because the other team couldn't run the ball.
If you take away the run, you're going to make the opposing offense one-dimensional. They did that. Marcus Mariota couldn't throw the ball. 6-16, only 60 yards passing the second half. Maybe it was the hit by Antoine Bethea that had a lot to do with that because, you know, as Jay Feely reported during the game, they were working on his knee. After the game, they verified it. He had a knee injury, and that was the last time he ran the ball, was when he got lit up by Antoine Bethea in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that probably contributed to it, but Mariota this season hasn't been great, and it's hard to know how he would have been, but it didn't seem like he just wasn't making very many plays at all, and he doesn't seem like he has quite the arm strength to make these pinpoint throws on the outside of the hashes. And the fact that he couldn't maybe run the ball took away that element. I'm not sure if the Cardinals realized that and did think that, hey, he's not mobile anymore and we can play a little bit back more, or if they just played the type of defense they wanted to and just kind of dominated in those matchups. But clearly, you know, he didn't look very good. And when you're not running the ball, I think a lot of the stuff Tennessee does is off of the run. You do some play action, you do some other stuff. And when it's not working, like we said, it's just tough for them.
Yeah, I mean, based on that performance, the Titans do not have their future franchise quarterback. He did not look like that guy. He had a career worse QB rating of under 40. It definitely was not his game. And, well, after the game, guess what? There was some bad news for the Cardinals, even in a win. Here's Bruce Arians on Monday.
Injury-wise, Jarrett Valdir cracked his ankle, and he'll go on IR. Earl Watford has a high ankle sprain, and we'll have to reshuffle some guys on the offensive line.
So how many different offensive line combinations now during the season, Darren?
Well, once we get to Sunday, the 14th game of the year, it'll be seven different starting offensive lines.
And you'll be on your fourth different starting left tackle, and they've already had four different starting left guards.
Yeah, I mean, it's not ideal.
The whole thing about chemistry and continuity, that's been a degree of difficulty for the Cardinals all year.
Again, a team can get past issues. I mean, in 2015, when they went all the way to the NFC Championship game, you're talking about not having Bobby Massey for the first two games at right tackle because he was suspended. You were talking about not having Mike Iupati, I believe, for the first three games when he hurt his knee in training camp. And you overcame that. And that's not a huge deal. The problem becomes when you have this, when you have constant shuffling, when you have constant injuries, when you have significant long-term injuries to arguably your best players. I mean, DJ Humphreys only played a handful of games this year with two different knee injuries. You know, Jarrett Valdir is out. It's just you're going to have a hard time being effective offensively when the guys blocking aren't there. And then when you add in all the other injuries, you're down to your you could make the argument you're down to your not only your third string quarterback, but maybe your fourth string running back. I know Kerwin Williams started the year second, but essentially he's been the fourth guy they've gone to as a starter after they've cycled through David Johnson and Chris Johnson and Adrian Peterson. So, I mean, these are not ideal situations, and it's going to be really hard to degenerate much.
You look at the Redskins, they've lost 6 out of 8. They have 13 players in injured reserve, including their top two running backs, their top two inside linebackers, two starting offensive linemen. You know who doesn't care? The Cardinals, based on now they have 12 guys in IR and 7 starters, if my count is correct. I mean, if you're the head coach like Bruce Arians, how do you process all that?
You just have to laugh and go on. You know, what's next? And get a game plan that these guys can succeed at and go win a game.
And now you're going to try and do that with Will Holden at left tackle and Evan Bain back at right guard.
Yeah, obviously on the road in this type of environment is not going to be easy. I mean, I don't think the Washington crowd is going to be nuts at this point in the season because they're eliminated from the playoffs, but you're still on the road. You're still learning on the fly a little bit, especially in Will Holden's case. So it's a tough game. I mean, I know Washington is struggling, and these teams are pretty similar where you went into the season thinking that both of them could easily have made the playoffs, and then everything has devolved because of the injuries. But Washington still has its quarterback and a very good one in Kirk Cousins. So that's the big deal, is you're going to have to probably score some points in this game because I don't think you're going to hold them to 7 like you just did the Titans.
What's interesting is after a recent loss, former Cardinal DJ Swearinger ripped the team in their practice habits, said they were lackadaisical, they weren't prepared. He said they approach practice and they're out there and it's just sort of like blah, 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 blah. That was DJ Swearinger's quote. Second time this year he has ripped their practice habits, which was very interesting. He showed up. They voted him a team captain right away. He'd barely been there. And, you know, anyway, as for Cardinals and maybe a game plan, well, if you got guys like Will Holden, Evan Bain back in the lineup, maybe you spread it out a little bit more. Maybe you go to a Chad Williams on a jet sweep again, 33 yards. He definitely looked like he had fresh legs, didn't he?
Chad Williams, yeah, yes. He should. He's barely played. Yeah. I mean, I guess the one good thing about using some of these guys at this point in the season is the fact that they are relatively fresh because they haven't been playing because they're the third string or whatever it might be. I mean, again, I think the issue, while you might be able to get a couple of those plays and have them be effective, the reality is as great as they played defensively last week, the Cardinals only scored 12 points and couldn't get in the end zone. And most weeks, that's not going to be enough. So offensively, they're going to have to find a way to get it in the end zone. And now you're talking about going back east, another early start, a little bit later than earlier in the year. It'll be an 11 o'clock Arizona kickoff time. The weather keeps bouncing around in terms of what it was. Originally, there was a possibility for snow in the forecast. Then when I checked over late last week, it was going to be sunny, cool, cold, but sunny. And now I just looked right before we did this, and now it's saying that, you know, there could be some precipitation, although at 43 degrees, that's just freezing rain that'll be falling on you on the sideline, Paul, and not snow.
It'll be Seattle all over again.
But so, I mean, I remember, quite frankly, before I don't want to get too far afield, but somebody asked me in my chat today about Pat Tillman. And the fact that his last game was at FedEx Field against the Redskins, and I was at that game, wow. And I remember it very distinctly, and it was the last game of the 2001 season. It was supposed to be the Cardinals' first game of the 2001 season. It got delayed and put at the end of the year because of the 9/11 attacks, and it was in the freezing rain. And the Cardinals had a chance to be 500 that year. They went into the game 7-8. They played not a great game, as you can well imagine, with the weather. They came up a little bit short. I just remember seeing Pat Tillman in the locker room. Is wearing just a towel because he hadn't quite gotten in the shower yet, and he was still angry about the loss and not getting to 500, and his teeth were chattering while he was, you know, saying what he was saying about being angry about the team not being able to get to 500. So that's what this team is facing, a possible bad weather game and beat up, and you got to try and find a way.
And you got to try and find that toughness. And we saw Chad Williams with some of that at the end of the jet sweep. In fact, we asked him about it in the locker room after the game.
Made a decision not to go out of bounds. You easily could have gone out of bounds, but you didn't.
I'm not going out of bounds.
Yeah. And that's you had that rep coming in. I mean, you know, you're going to play a physical brand of ball, aren't you?
Yeah, I want all of it.
There you go. The fast, the physical, Chad Williams. Now, BA said at his press conference on Monday, still having some issues getting off man cover and some of the press, so he's still learning as a receiver. And the passing game is still a work in progress with Blaine Gabbert as quarterback. We saw at least three key plays that could have been made. There were missed passes, two to Larry. One should have been a touchdown. The other was down the sideline. And then a big third down miss to Jerron Brown right down the middle. And B.A. was asked about accuracy. And I thought it was really interesting because after the game when the emotions were raw and I asked him about some of the inconsistent accuracy, I wasn't exactly sure how to put it when the question on Blaine Gabbert, I'll be honest with you.
You're in a tough spot with some of those.
You know, and B.A. Made a comment that we can't repeat right now, how he was getting the blank knocked out of him.
Yeah, I mean, that was his point, you know, in the press conference on Monday, is that when Blaine Gabbert's getting hit that much early on, his eyes and any quarterback's eyes are naturally going to start looking at the pass rush and not staying upfield. And then maybe when you start looking upfield and trying to dart it in there, you're going to be a little bit more inaccurate. Or if you're just trying to get rid of the ball quickly because you think the pass rush is coming, you're not going to follow through as well, and your footwork isn't going to be as good. So that's one possibility. But Blaine Gabbert has had some accuracy issues the last couple of weeks, and you want to make sure that it is something that isn't a longer-term issue, especially when you're trying to figure out where he fits in 2018 and if he fits in beyond that. Because in the preseason, he was so accurate, and his arm strength and accuracy was so intriguing. And now that you've hit the regular season, there have definitely been points when he's overthrown quite a few guys, and that's something that he wants to get fixed. And it, whether it's mechanically or not, it's hard to know if he can change that, because if he can't, that's one of the big shortcomings at quarterback, where he might have these tools, but if you're talking about a guy that's a 55 to 60% accuracy guy, then it's more of the Drew Stanton thing, where probably more in the mold of a backup than a regular starter.
My question on the accuracy thing is, and while I don't necessarily disagree with the fact that he was getting hit and everything, isn't that part of the gig? Isn't that part of being accurate, is that you can be accurate even with everything going on? I mean,
the miss to Larry in the end zone was more of a touch pass. Yeah. There wasn't a pass rush in his face on that one. And Steve Keim was pretty forthcoming in his segment. He said the touch passes, some of the passes outside the numbers, he has struggled with.
See, I struggle with the concept. I'm fully on board, and I've said this for a number of years now. I am not a believer that accuracy can get better. I'm a believer that if you draft a kid who isn't all that accurate in college, that's what you're drafting for the pros. It's not going to get better. And I know people, and the Cardinals have tried it a few times, Logan Thomas and John Skelton and Ryan Lindley. These guys aren't accurate. And if you're not going to be accurate in college, I don't know how it's going to get much better in the pros.
You know, the explanation is great. Oh, we can fix the mechanics, and we can fine-tune the footwork, and it'll result in better accuracy. I just haven't seen it. I haven't even seen anybody really make remarkable progress in that area by correcting the mechanics.
And that's obviously Blaine Gabbert was a first-round pick and had a lot of high hopes, and he's at this point in his career for a reason, and I think accuracy is probably one of them. And we've talked a lot about changing coordinators and changing coaches and all the systems and stuff, so there might be a small chance that he can improve in it, especially when you've got a guy like Bruce Arians and then Byron Leftwich and Tom Moore, and maybe they can get through to him how to have better touch on some of those passes. But when you got Larry Fitzgerald wide open in the end zone, and he's got such a huge catch radius that if you get it anywhere close to him, you're guaranteed that he's going to catch it, and to overthrow him, that's tough to miss that one. And they did pull out the win, but like Darren said, in the future, you can't miss on those opportunities.
You know, Ron Wolfley fronted me up on the air on Monday. I'm going to do the same thing to you guys. I'm going to return the favor. He threw out this sort of question. He said, "Hey, Paul, what do you think the Cardinals think right now of Blaine Gabbert?" I'm like, well, it's not like Steve Keim is pulling me aside and giving me the intel, okay, first off. But I think the Cardinals see enough. They keep seeing more and more. They keep seeing enough that's intriguing that it keeps them interested in a Blaine Gabbert. They keep seeing a little more upside here and there. Would you guys agree with that, or is that leveled off now after he's made four starts?
This is my interpretation, also saying that no one's pulled me aside, especially Steve Keim, and said, this is what we're thinking. So this is what I would be – let's put it this way. This is what I would be thinking when you look at the landscape of this quarterback situation, and I answered something similar on my chat. Drew Stanton is going to be a free agent. You're probably going to want to move on from him, I'm thinking, at this point, just because – I shouldn't say you're absolutely going to move on. But if you have a choice between having Drew Stanton here at his age or Blaine Gabbert here at his age, you're probably going to go Gabbert because he's a little bit younger. Okay.
Although Stanton might be tied to the head coach.
And that's also possible, and we'll see what happens. And there's a lot of moving parts here because Blaine Gabbert, of course, is also a free agent. You don't know what Carson Palmer is going to do for sure. I believe you don't know that yet, because I believe Carson Palmer doesn't know exactly what he's going to be for sure. On top of all this, we can sit here and talk about how they're going to draft a quarterback in the first round or second round, which I think there's a good chance of that happening.
Absolutely.
However, when you have to sign all these guys, that's well before the draft. You don't know who you're going to get in the draft. And you got to have some quarterbacks.
You don't know if somebody's going to trade right in front of you when you're getting ready to draft the future quarterback.
You know, so I think when it comes to what they're going to do with Gabbert and what they think of him, I don't think bringing him back absolutely says to the world, well, we think this guy can be our future quarterback. I don't think that it says that at all. I think it says we need a quarterback. And if getting him under contract now or right at the end of the season happens to jump ahead of when Carson Palmer says for sure he's going to play next year, or says for sure if we manage to get a guy high in the draft, you got to make that move.
No, that's logical. Once upon a time, Drew Stanton was the guy, and then a month later they got Carson Palmer.
That's how,
because they had to have a quarterback.
That's how I kind of see this right now. And then you let it sort out later. If you've got Carson Palmer and a first round pick and Blaine Gabbert, and heck, even at a minimum Drew Stanton, you can sort all that stuff out later. Unfortunately for players, contracts are not guaranteed, and I don't know if those guys are getting huge bonuses, so you can sort it out later.
And I think, you know, after those first two games, I'd argue that the optimism was higher about Blaine Gabbert than it is now, because you've seen some of his faults in the last couple of games with the turnovers and the inaccuracy. But I agree with Darren, where if you bring Blaine Gabbert back, he makes sense as a bridge quarterback or a backup quarterback. At this point, from what we've seen, I don't think Steve Keim would go in and definitively say, this is my starter for 2018. And I think if Carson Palmer comes back, he's definitely your starter for 2018. And then you look at if Blaine is here and Carson's not, I think you're definitely looking either in free agency or the draft for another option, because I think at this point you want to have somebody who you feel like has a really high upside. And at this point, Gabbert doesn't show as high of an upside as maybe a first-round pick.
And I would say this. If Carson Palmer is not here for 2018, whether they bring back Blaine Gabbert or they have Drew Stanton or whatever, I think Carson Palmer is the only one who they say he's our starter because he's back. Everybody else is going to be – I mean, because here's the other thing you got to keep in mind if Bruce Arians is the coach next season. Every time he's ever talked about a quarterback, especially when taken in the first round, is you got to play the guy. You got to play the guy. You got to play the guy. Now, I'm not saying they're going to, but every single time it's come up, he says, guy can't be any good unless you play him. So then I don't think they're going to – now, could we get to the end of training camp and say, okay, this guy's not ready because of he's never been in a huddle or never been under center, or et cetera, et cetera. That's possible. And then Blaine Gabbert's your starter or whomever. But
I mean, Carson could come back next year, and a rookie could be underneath him like a Pat Mahomes and KC behind Alex Smith. That could happen.
Because I do think Bruce Arians has said you play the rookie, but I think that would be trumped by Bruce Arians says Carson's my guy, and he would have Carson be his guy.
And you'll know 5 days after the Super Bowl with Carson Palmer. Isn't that the contract situation?
Right. Yeah. That's when his contract is. So they're going to have an answer. They're going to have an answer for Carson. No later than 5 days after the Super Bowl. They're going to have an answer about Bruce Arians very soon after the Seattle game's over, because if he decides he's not going to be here, you got to find a coach. And he even said on Arizona Sports the other day that, hey, I'm going to wait till after the season, but then my decision would come real quick, because it would have to.
That means you guys are working New Year's Day, just to let you know.
Well, we're working.
That's what that means.
We're working New Year's Day anyways. It's the day after the season.
Yeah,
so
myself as well. I'm just trying. There's comfort. There's comfort in numbers on that one.
Larry Fitzgerald will draw this out as long as humanly possible.
Oh, yeah. Well, all right. If the offense is in flux, maybe we're starting to get some answers on defense. Corey Peters got a 3-year extension. What about the two guys who had the two interceptions, starting with Tremont Williams? Here's the GM, Steve Keim.
I thought Tremont Williams played extremely well. He's a guy that's been very, very consistent. You know, his ability to read routes, he's savvy, he's physical. For a guy that's a veteran player to come in late in the process like that, again, I'm extremely proud of the way he's played.
My only question on Tremont Williams, if you bring him back and you're really thinking of him as your number two cornerback next season, Kyle, is the Cardinals love to play man cover. At his age, that's not really his forte. He's more suited to zone, and I'm presuming that's why they played more zone this year.
I think they played a lot of zone early without him. I don't think you're changing your defense because of Tremont Williams either way. And, you know, he's definitely not the most fleet of foot cornerback. I mean, Patrick Peterson would smoke him in a foot race, but Tremont Williams is so smart, and he knows what routes are coming, so he can get that jump on him that I don't think he's had many plays where he's just been dominated by the wide receiver who can double move past him or anything. And I think I mean, I think he can play man. I don't think he's an elite cornerback anymore, but I think he's been a really positive addition. And if you are talking about next year, it's tough because he's going to be – I think he's 34 now, so you're talking about a 35-year-old cornerback, which there are probably two or three guys at that age in the NFL at this point. So it's always a risk, but he's played so well that I think you have to consider it.
Well, and if you got a real burner, a DeAndre Hopkins or a Julio Jones, obviously Patrick Peterson right. is on that guy anyway, you know, all the matchups. All right, what about Josh Bynes? He's been one of the leading tacklers ever since he's been in the rotation. A linebacker, got his second career pick. He took it down to the 15 and paid for it. An offensive lineman just buried him on a late hit where he drew the flag as well. But in terms of the Cardinals' defense and how they really thrived against Tennessee, here's Josh Bynes.
I think everybody just bought in to what Coach was saying. Like, the team, we know we're a better team than what the record says. I think defensively, the last few games, we've just been stopping the run, definitely holding the team under 100 yards, and definitely being efficient on third down.
I didn't realize until our Jim Omohundro crunched these numbers, guys. Against Jacksonville, the Cardinals' defense held the Jags 1 of 12 on third down. The Rams went 3-11 on third down, and then Tennessee 4 of 12 on third down. That is quite the turnaround from the first half of the season.
Yeah, it is. And again, I think it helps a little bit that you're playing at home. We talked earlier in the podcast about how good they are with rush defense.
And crowd noise, probably.
Yes. And if you go back to, if a team's not able to run, you're in, as Bruce Arians likes to talk about on the flip side for this offense, you're in third and not as manageable situation. So it's a lot easier to get stops.
All right, now the Cardinals go out to D.C. Two of their last three are on the road. The Redskins went out to the L.A. Chargers in that soccer stadium. A couple of their players ripped the turf, by the way, said it was a soccer field. I'm not sure what that means. What is the difference between a soccer field in terms of the turf and the grass than a football field? I'm really not sure, but they lost badly at the Chargers, 30-13. However, there are some, shall we say, mitigating factors when the Cardinals go to the East Coast, and here's Bruce Arians.
They're tough at home. It's a tough stadium to play in over the years, having been there. They're professionals, too. They're going to be ready to win. So we've got to go play our best game. Something we've struggled to do is go play early on Sunday mornings on the East Coast.
Yeah, no doubt. Isn't there a number where the Cardinals are at 5-1 in afternoon kickoffs?
Yeah, I don't know.
West Coast time, something like that this year?
Yeah, and they were having tough time historically heading into this season on the East Coast. And obviously the first few games didn't go very well, and they were able to win that one in Indy, but that was against a depleted team. But a lot of the other ones have been rough.
All right. And then you have the rivalry, or at least what used to be a big rivalry. You mentioned Pat Tillman.
Yeah.
Let's go back in the hot tub time machine as well. How about 2008? Darnell Dockett. And we bring this up because Bertrand Berry was on the Red Sea Report, and he was talking about how he got Dockett together with Antonio Smith and Antrell Roll after Dockett's retirement. And one of the big talking points when they got this roundtable going was Dockett's hatred for the Redskins. He grew up in the area, just didn't like the hometown team, and he really didn't like Clinton Portis, the running back. So Antonio Smith is telling the story of how the two met at the bottom of a pile.
One year we was playing Washington Redskins.
And everybody know
and
I hate
Dockett
Washington.
Ran from one sideline all the way to the next on a sweep play, you know, to make the tackle on the sideline. He ran past me, so as the play is over there on the sideline, I'm running. I'm like, man, what's the scuffle over there? And I get to the pile, and I heard Clinton Portis say, and you can see the spit coming out of his mouth, man. You know, Dockett got him on the ground. You know, I had to come pull him up off of him. But that was just the ferociousness that he played with. I truly believe that we were the most physical team in 08. That year we
no
played,
doubt.
We was a mean bunch of birds out there.
He almost said it. He almost
he
said
it,
too.
He
wanted to.
He wanted to.
Antonio's. And that's true. They were nasty. Like the sign said this past week, dismember the Titans. When you're depleted, you know, come out and just bring some nasty attitude, bring some physicality. That can go a long way on a Sunday.
And people talk about DJ Swearinger bringing that attitude to the team last year. And obviously he's on the other side of things now when he's going to be pumping up his team. But I think the Cardinals defense has shown recently that maybe they don't have as many of those fiery guys, but they're certainly playing really well, and it should be a fun matchup.
It was interesting, by the way. I'll leave you with this. One defensive guy told me after the game that Mariota was expecting all these exotic looks and exotic blitzes and coverages that the Cardinals are kind of known for, and they didn't do any of that. That when he was sort of expecting those situations, what the game film would tell him, they played it straight. and that messed him up. And they just decided to play a lot of straight-up football and try and beat the guy one-on-one, and there you go. They allowed 10 rushing yards in the second half. We'll see if it can continue. The last three games of the season, that is Cardinals Underground.